Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Wounch.
You wounch, said not that far.
Wounch, downtown.
Wild thing.
Wounch, down, 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 down.
Wild thing.
Not one of my favorite songs.
That song, there's only the... I guess there are some verses, aren't there?
I don't know. That, I only know the chorus.
I feel like they just say wild thing over and
wild
over.
Wild thing.
Wild thing.
It has like some...
It always makes
drums.
Me think of... what's the baseball movie?
There's a lot of baseball movies.
No, the one where Charlie Sheen plays, and that's his like theme song when he comes
that's
out.
That's
his... It's... Oh, man.
Is it about the field?
No, it's not Field of Dreams. I mean, there is
that's
a field.
Like the
it's
only
baseball
real
field.
Baseball movie I know.
That people are screaming
like
it at their radio
too.
Right now, or at their computer. They're screaming the name of it.
Well, I'm not a big Charlie Sheen fan, so I guess I...
It's there, the Cleveland Indians, and they, you know, they're trying to lose on purpose.
The movie is called Major League.
Major League. Oh, my gosh. Wow. I'm so ashamed of myself.
Down, down, down. Charlie
Wild
Sheen.
Tiger blood.
How's it going, everybody? You're listening to The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
We're back, as usual.
And badder than ever.
Yeah, badder than ever. We are the wildest things that has ever hit the Commander circuit. I don't know if that.
Why did we sing that song?
I was humming something, and then I think
that must
you thought,
have like, cued it off.
Yeah, you thought that's what I was singing, but that was not what I was singing. Ugh. I don't like that song.
You know what people are singing is the praises of Card Kingdom.
That's a very good point.
So, segue, man.
Good segue.
Thank you. Once again, we're just going to go ahead, and you know Card Kingdom's our sponsor now. They've been great to the show. We get feedback every single day, Jimmy, from people who are trying Card Kingdom out because of our show and are really having positive experiences from it. We're going to read one from a longtime listener, two tweets from some of our longest listeners.
Two people we've eaten dinner with.
Two very cool people. So Shivam Butt, actually, I think is how you pronounce it. He tweeted at us and said, so Card Kingdom, I bought a bunch of lands from them for my draft set, and one came back a bit scratched, as if Wolverine got to it.
A bit scratched, by the way. That.
So that sounds bad, but then Shivam said, but I pinged them about it, and not even a day later, they have a replacement in the mail on its way on the house.
Wow. That's amazing.
I mean, you know, mistakes are going to happen in business, and you hope they don't happen very often, but when they do, how the company responds to that is a really big thing. And so the fact that Card Kingdom quickly resolves the situation and, you know, does it on their dime and make sure that the customer is satisfied is a really big thing. In fact, Eric Landis, who is another guy we had dinner with and another longtime listener,
Prague Boog,
answered Shivam and said, I've occasionally ordered from them since they sponsored Limited Resources, which was back in the day, A-plus service every time.
Every time. And the fact that it was just a single land. It wasn't like a Gaia's Cradle or something crazy. It was a land that, you know, maybe is 5 cents in value or whatever. But
I think it's P3K lands or something.
Ooh, okay.
Shivam likes his fancy lands. But yes, you're right. It shouldn't be like, it's just this little thing. And so I won't worry about it or they won't worry about it. Like, you know, you expect your cards in a certain condition. You expect them to arrive in a certain time. And Card Kingdom makes sure that those things happen. And if you're not satisfied, they make sure that you are.
Yeah, so that's great service. Thank you again, guys, for tweeting at us when you have praise for Card Kingdom, because it makes me really happy, at least, being like, sweet, we chose a great sponsor. These guys are great. Obviously, they've proven themselves time and time again with everyone else that's sending in comments to the show.
Yeah, we don't want to have a sponsor that we can't actually recommend and stand behind. Make sure that when you order cards, you go to cardkingdom.com and use the affiliate link /commandzone. And you'll be supporting the podcast. That's actually the best way possible for you to support the cast.
Yep. And they'll know that we sent you there. Second thing up in our upkeep step, a while back we were talking about a Reservoir Dogs EDH deck. And I was trying to think, like, what would the card be for the ear that gets chopped off halfway
through? Oh, we
asked
the listeners that.
Yeah. And so we had two people that delivered what I think is the correct answer now. John Penisi on email and Neil Gwenter said, Krovakin Fetish. It's this... Disgusting card.
It's messed up.
Yeah, two in the black. It's all the way back from, I think, Unlimited, or Ice Age is the last time it was printed. It's two in the black enchantment that says when Krovakin Fetish enters the battlefield, draw a card at the beginning of the next turn's upkeep, so it's a cantrip, and then the enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for a 3-mana enchant aura. Pretty bad.
But the reason that it's the Reservoir Dogs is the picture.
Yeah.
It is a necklace that's holding a couple of eyeballs and two ears.
Yeah, and the flavor text, some Krovakins find strength in the ears and eyes of their victims and wear such fetishes into battle. And I would argue that the person that cuts off the ear, spoiler alert, in Reservoir Dogs definitely has quite a fetish.
Michael Madsen?
Yeah. I love that.
All right. That's the song we should sing. It's just not right. We've already sang that on the song because we can't do it again. Or on the cast. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we get into our main topic today, which is building on a budget, we're going to talk about budget cards and how you build budget. iTunes reviews. Guys, what's up?
What happened? We gave away free packs to someone for iTunes reviews.
We asked for iTunes reviews. We didn't get very many. I'm a little bit upset. I know we can do better than this. There's like 20,000 people listening to this show or something. And even if you watch it on iTunes, we can do more than like 3 reviews. Come on.
iTunes. Yeah.
Open up your iTunes. Just search for Command Zone, and there's a ratings review tab. You just click there. Take less than 2 minutes just to say something nice. And you might win prizes. So it's not even just like only to support us. It's also for your own like lucky maybe future self.
I mean, the fact that we are saying that you might win prizes, you could reasonably expect that relatively soon, and we're not talking Deck Doctor soon, you're going to maybe win a prize for leaving a nice
I don't want
review.
Deck Doctor soon to be a thing. Do we have to make that a thing?
Hashtag Deck Doctor soon. Got there. Yeah, leave an iTunes review. Super simple. All right, so our main topic today is something that I was reading our show description, Josh, and it said, focused on the Command Zone, focused on all aspects of gameplay and strategy from table politics, budget builds to deck building, and more. And I realized we've only talked about budget builds once on the show, and that was when Andy Hullbone came on and talked about his Xenagod deck, which was a budget deck, but we didn't really talk about what it means to be a budget deck. So we're finally getting around to a promise in our show description that we made a very long time ago.
Yeah, it's funny because I haven't read that show description in literal years. And when I saw it, I was like, yeah, you're right. We did promise that, and we have not fulfilled that promise. So here we go.
It's also something that people constantly ask us about. They're always like, hey, have you thought about Pauper EDH, which is only commons? And obviously budget comes into, it's something that every single player has to deal with. So today's episode is an overview about how to build with a budget and how to avoid some also common pitfalls that I think a lot of people run into. So.
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm not great at this myself, so.
No, me neither,
actually.
Something
I could probably learn.
Well, when we played EDH last night, I was like taking apart one of Craig's Infect decks and being like, Craig, what about this is budget? Like, let me find out really how, and I started writing down some cards, taking pictures and stuff, just to sort of get like a little crash course before I finalized the outline. So it helped out a little bit.
Infect, definitely budget.
Definitely budget. The first question is why budget? So there are multiple reasons why someone might want to or need to build on the budget. The first is you have a set allowance, so you can't go past a certain dollar amount. For some people, this is a literal allowance. Mm-hmm. If you're still, in middle, high school, however long you get allowance till. I don't know when that stops. I guess parents are always kind of giving you allowance to some degree. So you have a literal, like, I only have $100. I only have $50. I only got $10. I can't spend more than that.
Man, your allowance was good. Mine was not that much.
I got $20 a month. That was my allowance.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So $5
a week.
Yeah.
That's about what I got. I had to mow the lawn.
Ooh. Yeah.
If I didn't mow the lawn, I didn't get the allowance.
I washed my dad's car a bunch.
Nice.
So that's a reason to have a budget. Another reason, it's your first deck. It's something that you're looking at being like, hey, I want to build a bunch of decks in the future. I want to build multiple decks. And so I don't want to just waste all my money on one deck. I'd rather have it split up over multiple decks.
I really like this one. It reminds me of like there's this truism about like online gaming, right? Which is like whatever character you buy the first skin for, you'll never play that character again. And it feels the same way. And this is a really smart thing, which is like early on, if you're just getting into Commander and the format, the first deck you build, don't invest a ton of money into it because you don't know enough about the format to know what it is that you're going to like about it or that's really going to call to you. And so it's better to just have a deck that's fun but not expensive so that you don't, when you inevitably abandon it or switch to something else, it's not like, oh my gosh, I spent so much money on that.
What am I going to do with all these cards now that are specific to this commander? Another reason you'd have a budget is you're experimenting. And again, same sort of idea. You don't want to invest heavily into an idea or like a, I wonder if this is going to work. So you build it, you sort of buy the pieces, and you're like, oh, it doesn't work.
I have like two decks that are sitting somewhere where I'm like, I either have to fix them or take them apart because they're bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just didn't stand up to the
They didn't work how I wanted to. I built a Mazurek deck.
Oh, yeah. Remember? I think it still works in a very underpowered situation.
That's why I've kept it around, because I think, like, okay, if certain play group or people or there's newer players, then maybe I'll bring it and I at least have that deck. But it's, I don't know. That deck's bad. It's just sitting there, and there's expensive cards in there, you know? There's, like, Grave Packs and Doubling Seasons and stuff. So.
I feel the same way about a lot of my decks, too. Another just main reason to budget is that it is, in general, a smart thing to do. Budgeting is something that they don't teach you in high school or college about life in general. And it's a very important thing to just both instill in your normal life and also to transfer over to Magic the Gathering. So, for instance, if you want to play for, I don't know, you pick up Magic, you're like, hey, I want to play this next year. It's like, hey, don't waste all your money right now. Don't spend so much money that you get burnt out. So you're trying to continue your hobby over time. It's like if you wanted to go fishing and you're like, oh, okay, it's going to cost X amount of dollars to buy gas for the boat each time. I'm just going to go on one big boating trip and waste all the gas money up front. You're not going to go fishing again. And every time you go fishing after the first time, it's going to probably be better.
This is great. I never would have used a fishing analogy, but
my friend
this actually happened to a friend of yours?
No, it didn't happen to a friend of mine, but I didn't realize fishing, because at first I was like, it's a budget thing. You just buy a stick and some lures and throw it in the water. Yeah. I didn't know much about fishing. And then my friend was like, oh yeah, my dad, you know, for his, like, he retired, he got a boat, he went tuna fishing. And I was like, oh, cool, the boat's huge. That's so cool. You guys catch big fish? He's like, yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, and it's about like $7,000 to just get the gas each time. And my jaw hit the floor.
That's a hell of a boat.
Yeah, it's a big boat. So I just completely forgot about all the sort of hidden costs that go into hobbies. So that's another reason that you need to be budgeting. So you want to set yourself up for success, obviously. And also, you can spend according to your priorities. So you're like, I have a budget for Magic, and I have a budget for groceries every month, and I have a budget for entertainment and like movies and stuff I'm going to go out to see, so that you don't, you know, waste too much money on one thing, don't have enough for the other. So budgeting in general is a good thing to do. And it also reduces stress and anxiety and all that stuff. So,
I mean, when you're disciplined, discipline takes out stress out of a lot of things, because you know that you have a core philosophy about stuff. So it takes out some of those decision makings. It's it just makes life easier.
Yeah.
So those are all good things. I'm not good at any of the stuff that you said.
Really?
Yeah. So
budgeting. I guess I'm not very good
in
at it
life.
Either.
I'm okay at it, but I'm not good at it. And like for my hobbies, I'm not that great at it.
Yeah. All right. So a couple small notes. Let's talk about playing cheap decks real fast. So playing a cheap deck sucks when you feel like you're trying to outrace cards like Gaia's Cradle, Tabernacle at Pendril Veil. You feel like your deck's power level just sucks because you didn't put enough money into it. And you feel like you can't do what other decks are doing because of money.
Well, that does suck. That's a crappy feeling. Yeah.
Playing a cheap deck rocks when you're killing people in unconventional ways. You're like using politics and other like dynamics to win a game. And especially when your very cheap cards destroy their expensive ones.
Yeah, when you stone rain somebody's Gaia's Cradle, that's great.
Yeah, great feeling.
It just feels good when your deck is, it's built out of a bunch of cards that maybe aren't the top tier cards and you're able to compete.
Feels good, man. Okay, let's walk through the basics, friends, of building a deck and how it can directly... Viewers at home, you actually can see the dynamic nature of getting rid of old pages of copy.
We're done with that page.
So let's walk through the beginnings of building a deck and how it can directly affect your budget. First off, how much money do you have? That's a good question to ask. So let's say you have 99 cards in the deck. Actually, let's not say that's how many cards you have in the deck plus your commander. 36 to 30 of them are going to be lands. So you divide your budget, your total money that you have, and you divide it by like 63 or 64. And that's going to give you like the base average of how much you can spend on average per card. Doesn't mean you need to spend that on each card. Like some cards can be $1, another card can be 5 cents.
Right. And it makes it so that, yeah, the expensive cards especially are going to weight you so much towards like, well, if I want this card and it's, you know, $15 and my whole budget for the whole deck is $30, do I really want to like only have half my money spent on one card?
Yeah.
Probably you don't.
Yeah, there's going to be a cheaper and better alternative. We'll talk about that later. Colors. Sorry, Josh. Maybe this is why you're bad at budget.
Yeah.
The more colors you play, the more expensive your deck's going to be.
By far.
Every single color you add adds a literal thousands of cards into your pool that you can now put in your deck to make it better or just have more options for. And so by sheer virtue of that, your deck's going to get more expensive, not to mention the mana base as well.
I mean, the single most expensive part of Magic is the mana base. I mean, look at like Legacy. What's the big gateway or barrier to entry? It's dual lands. Fetch lands in Modern, just building your mana base is... Because all the lands we want to use are the same lands that they want to use in the other formats. We're going to get into this a little bit later, but it's a really big thing. So a monocolor deck that's basically going to play, you know, of its 37 lands, 33 or 34 of them are going to be basics. That means you have 33% of your deck costs a nickel each.
Oof.
Or nothing, really, because everybody's got lands. But all of a sudden, you go to three colors, and now you're only going to run, you know, maybe 15 basics total. That means you just got to pay for more cards. Mm-hmm. So instead of like 63 cards, you're actually paying for 85 cards or, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, I can see how like keeping yourself to one or two colors is going to make your deck just 30% cheaper or so, because you're just not paying for some of those cards.
Especially if it's like your first deck that you're making, like doing a five color deck off the bat when you've never built a five color mana base, you don't know what to fetch for, and when you do end up fetching for stuff, it's just you're not going to have as good of a time than something that's more linear and focused. And so strategies, that's actually a really easy way to decide how am I going to make my deck more budget. And one of the very easiest ways is just choosing a strategy that benefits not having an expensive deck. So Infect has to be by far the cheapest of cheap decks. This deck is all about creatures that have historically not seen that much play in competitive Magic and are in general just kind of underpowered because you're trying to do 10 infect damage to someone. They are benefited by equipment that are just sort of like Voltron-y equipment. And for the most part, they're small, cheap creatures. They're
combat tricks.
Combat tricks, yeah.
Not expensive cards generally.
Yeah. And because it's such a specific tactic, it hasn't seen play in Standard because it needs to consistently be in Standard in order to be a viable tactic. And there's only one Infect deck in Modern as well.
And most of those Modern cards are like 2 CMC or 3 CMC and less for the Infect specifically. But there's a whole bunch of Infect cards that are from the 4 CMC or more. And those are just not playable in Modern and stuff. So those cards are all cheap for you, but we can play them just fine.
Yeah, not to mention like Noble Hierarch is one of the most expensive cards in the Infect deck, and that card doesn't even say Infect on it.
And we don't need it in Commander. You don't have to have that card.
Yeah, true. So, and it's very hard to play that card,
too. It's not that it's bad. I'm just saying you don't have to have it.
You have to be in Banter 5-color, essentially. Yeah. Or potentially 4-color coming soon. Oh, boy. Token decks also are very cheap. I learned a lot of this from Craig, by the way, because he's the original guy that was like, hey, I have 36 Commander decks. And it's like, how is that possible? It's like, well, 10 of them are Infect. 3 of them are token.
He has a lot of cards, but he knows he's got a couple expensive decks, but not all 36 can be, you know, $700 decks or $2,000 decks.
Exactly.
When you have that many, some of them are $50 decks.
Yeah. Voltron is also a pretty cheap deck in general because a lot of the key equipment are, they're so big and bulky that it's hard to like make them really expensive.
I mean, a lot of people right now are probably at home or in their car or whatever going, but the Sword Ofs are expensive. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to have those cards. You know, I think people get under this misconception that, like, if I don't have Sword of Fire and whatever, then the deck's no good. And it's like, listen, there are a lot of equipment that are 85 or 90% as good as Sword of One and Inferno or whatever. And they don't cost 80% as much. They cost 10% as much or 5% as much. And so you can really be like, it's one card in my deck. If it's 90% as good as Sword of Fire and Ice, that's fine. Or 70% as good or whatever.
Yeah. And you can just make up those effects, not make them up, but like get those effects back from other cards as well. It may take you two cards to get the full effect of what Sword of War and Peace does, or Feast and Famine, for instance, like the untap effect is really powerful. But, you know, you can make that up by getting other cards that do similar things. Finally, control decks. I think can be pretty cheap because you're just playing every counter spell that Magic's ever made.
A lot of them aren't very expensive, you know, that your Cryptic Commands maybe do. I was thinking, like, the Mizzix deck is not super expensive, and that's maybe the single most powerful deck in the format. Maybe second or third, but it's definitely up there. If you wanted a really powerful deck that's not super expensive, you could build Mizzix, and there's a few cards, Snapcaster, Jacefriend's Prodigy, Past in Flames, a couple others, but, you know, all those X counter spells, those are like 7 cents, you know, and you've got 12 of those. Earthquake's not expensive. Like, most of your cards, you don't, sure, don't put just Taxing and Probe in there, but Brainstorm's not expensive.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, I took Serum Visions out of my deck. That's, you know, that one's expensive because of Modern, but there's a whole bunch of decks where if you just look at it, really it's five cards making that deck expensive. And if you just took out those five cards, it's not really going to affect your play that much.
Yeah. It's amazing how just a few cards can absurdly double the price of a deck, and it's hard to sort of see it on paper when you're playing the deck, but if you look at it on like Tapped Out or whatever, you can very clearly see, like, oh wow, the majority of the cost of this deck is coming from like this pool of cards here.
Yeah, it's like the deck says $600, but these five cards are $400 of it.
Yeah,
you know, that can happen all the time.
Yeah, the last sort of basic of building a budget deck is power level, and this is sort of the trickiest one to inherently do, because power level is not inherently tied to the cards in EDH, but most often more expensive cards almost always equals higher power level, unless it's like a very rare card, like an alpha card that you just can't find anymore.
Yeah, I think that's true. Or they combine effects so that, like you said, you can often replicate the effect of any card.
Yeah.
But you just need two cards to do it, or, you know, or there's a, very often there's a card that does the exact same thing or almost the exact same thing. It's just more expensive mana-wise or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to choosing a commander. So for those of you that have already decided what commander you want to build for your budget deck, you can sort of ignore this section. For those of you that are like, hey, I want to build a deck, I want to build a budget, I don't know what commander I should go for, your commander addresses each of these sort of building blocks we talked about. So the color, the colors that it is, the strategy of what you want to do with the deck, and sort of the power level of the commander. So if this is your first deck, again, don't go wild with it. I remember my first deck was with Drownu Lich Lord. It was like this blue-black, weird sort of Jace, Snapcaster-esque ability on it that you could recur stuff from your graveyard. But I just went ham on it. I was like, I'm going to buy all this stuff. I'm going to do this, this, and this. And I don't use probably 50% of those cards now because...
Because it was the skin for the character that you first played in the game. And we all know you will never play that character again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I
think, like, I would definitely suggest monocolor, or I would actually suggest two color.
Yeah, two color I think is the best.
Yeah, because it gives you still a lot of cards in the card pool that are possible. A lot of interesting interactions. Mono decks can be a little bit weaker because each color has something that it's not good at doing. So, you know, if you just go mono red, you just can't beat enchantments. That kind of, that can turn you off early in the format. But if you go red, you know, blue, now you have a variety of ways to deal with different effects out there. So that's what I would say is dual color if you're starting a budget deck, especially if you're new to the format. If you're not new to the format, though, I think you could go three. Once you get into five color, the mana base is just naturally going to be expensive unless you just go all Trilands and Guildgates and stuff, which, honestly, it's not that bad. I have a couple decks like that. And are they as good as my best decks? No. But are they as bad as my Mazurek deck? No. So,
yeah, the percentage difference in how bad it is just because you're running like slightly better, worse lands is not that significant at the end of the day. Another thing to really keep in mind is that you can always expand your deck in the future. It's not like the cards that you buy now are the cards that are forever going to be in this deck. So you don't have to have this sort of like, it's, for instance, it's tough to do with a car. Being like, I want to mod out the engine.
A lot of people do that, though.
They do, but it's a lot of work, right? Yeah, you got to take it into a shop. You got to do all that stuff. For a deck, you take a card out of a sleeve and you put a new one in. You know, that takes 10 seconds. It's fun, too.
It makes you re-energize to play the deck. I just went through and retuned, like, a bunch of my decks before we played the other night. And all of a sudden, I was excited to play a couple of decks that I just really had kind of been, never took out and played anymore because I was kind of bored with them. Yeah. And just putting in, like, four cards... All of a sudden, I was like, ooh, this could be cool. And I played those decks again and had fun playing them where I was sort of down on them before. So this can even be, even if you're not budget. So it's naturally something that you want to do anyway. I like this thought process, which is like, just because your deck is not like 100% tuned right now, that can be a really good thing. It gives you somewhere to go with it.
Yeah, and you can even change the commander too, right? You're not locked into a commander. You can add another color down the road by adding a commander that shares two of the original ones, now has a third, or you can just go full five color. So yeah, you can change the focus, adding new cards in. So like, don't be so stressed out about the choices you make early in the budget build, being like, oh God, I was locked into this budget, so I had to do this, this, and this. It's like, well, it's a great starting off point. It's the same as sort of buying one of the commander precons, and you know you're going to upgrade it. We have full episodes talking about how you can upgrade it, so that definitely helps out a lot there.
It is also really good, and it fits in with what we said earlier, which is like, if you build a control type of deck, then it's going to be easier to change that commander because you're going to be able to find that archetype.
Yeah.
Whereas if you build like an enchantment deck, well, it's going to be harder because there's just less options for you.
Yeah.
You know, if you build a token deck, well, there's commanders in almost every color that or color pairing you can think of that could facilitate token decks. But yeah, if you build like something that's super graveyard focused, well, you're going to be stuck into certain colors, although that's pretty wide too. But just be, I would just say like, certain types of archetypes are going to make it easier for you to sort of expand it and not have what happened to Jimmy and myself happen, which is like, man, I was really specific with my first deck, and now like a bunch of the cards that I spent money on, they would only be good in that deck. And so, you know, I wish I would have spent it on stuff that's like more of a staple across the format and could go in more decks.
Yeah, and also a thing that I think people can easily get tricked by, and I've had people say this to me on Twitter, which is like, oh, my friend built this deck, so I don't want to do this. It's like, well, you still can do that. There's nothing wrong with that. No one's going to like give you a nasty glare. If you built a one-to-one copy of a deck, sure, but you could say like, hey, everyone in our play group has Graveyard Recursion in all of their decks, but that doesn't mean that they're each individually less unique or whatever as you know, a beautiful flower in the wild because they did something that's similar to other people. There's no shame in that because at the end of the day, the cards that you put in the deck are still your own individual expression in it and also how you play it.
I have this friend, and whenever I go to dinner or lunch or anything with him, he'll never order what anybody else ordered.
Oh,
and I never understood this because...
Was he planning to share with other people?
No, he's not eating anything anybody else ordered. So what does it matter what everybody else ordered? But he doesn't... There's something in his brain, like he wants to be unique and have his own whatever. And that's how I sort of look at this, which is like, we both have Mizzix decks. There's a couple of Animar decks. There's a whole bunch of decks in our playgroup where more than one person have it. Or even there's some decks that... Three people have their own version of that deck, and if that commander or that type of deck makes you excited, you should just do it. You shouldn't worry about does somebody else have it or not. That has no bearing, really. It's like, no, I was excited to build this deck, and that makes me excited to play. And Magic is about having fun and being excited.
Yeah, my Drowny deck, by the way, is my Marchesa deck. That's what it turned into.
Oh, nice.
Probably about two of the cards from the original deck are in that deck.
I was
going to
say, there's not a ton of overlap. I guess there's a little.
Good spells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can use the mana base.
What was your first deck ever? Was it Chromat?
It was Nekusar.
Yeah.
I actually built Nekusar, and then I expanded it into five color later. But yeah, I built like a bad Nekusar deck. It had like a... Well, I didn't know. It had like Assemble the Legion and like... You know, that's got white in it, so it's not that. But
your five color,
my first five color build of Nekusar had Assemble the Legion, but my first build of Nekusar had like a bunch of random like two drop creatures. I didn't really know how Commander worked at the time, so
you wanted to curve out,
I guess. Now it's got like four creatures total.
Yeah. One final thing to say here is that there are budget builds for every single commander. So, for instance, Animar recently saw like a big price spike. He was no longer a cheap-ish commander. Now he's actually, you know, cost a decent amount of money. But that doesn't mean that the Animar deck is expensive. Just Animar is, because our friend Vinny has a Morph Animar deck, and it's awesome, and it's super sweet, and playing with the Morphs is great, and it costs him very little to build the deck. Kalia is typically seen as also a very expensive deck because you're playing with like Avacyn and big demons and expensive cards like that. But there have been so many angels, demons, and dragons printed over the years that you can still really have a fun time with a Kali deck without having to be like, I have to buy the most expensive cards for this to be fun and make it great. It's like, no, just do something that you're going to enjoy. And those cards, too, like a card, for instance, like Bogard and Hellkite, when it enters the battlefield, it deals 5 damage spread across creatures and players. That card is sweet. It's really good in Kalia, but it doesn't necessarily belong in every Kalia deck. But if you started with that card in Kalia, it doesn't mean that when you build it more powerful down the line that you might not get rid of it. And that card is so good, it can go in a lot of decks. So it's not like it's just going to go to the trash bin somewhere. the forgotten locker but don't, of Magic cards.
I mean, forgotten locker, okay. Don't throw them in the trash, guys.
Yeah. Let's compare a couple of cards. We've been talking about a bunch of them, but not actually sort of looking at them. So a card like Riss the Redeemed, this card is typically seen
as... expensive.
It's expensive, not mana cost-wise, and that's why it's expensive. It's a one drop, and you can tap it to put a 1/1 green and white elf warrior creature token to play, and you can pay even more to populate, essentially... Not populate. Put the token into play that's a copy of that creature. So for each creature token. So Risk gets out of control fast. He's one of the best sort of token generators, but he costs
a lot of money. You double your tokens every turn, right? So like if I have 5 tokens, you activate Risk for 6 mana, and now you have 10 tokens because you just doubled the amount. So
yeah,
Risk expensive, but there's a cheaper alternative.
Yeah, Trastani, Selesnya's Voice. Green, green, white, white, 2/5. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain life to that equal that creature's toughness, which is in itself pretty sweet. And then she can also populate that puts a token on the battlefield that's a copy of a creature token you control. So a lot of the cards in those two decks are going to be the exact same. And if you don't want to spend a bunch of money just on the commander itself, you can just play Trastani. And the power level will go down a little bit, but the deck will still essentially function the way that you intended for it to. And it's still going to be a sweet deck.
Yeah, it seems like, oh, that's so much worse. And it is, except for that. Also, Risk, the ability to double the amount of tokens you have, that's costed more. It costs 6 mana, whereas Trastani, it's 3 mana to populate. So it does, I mean, listen, there's still a gap there, and mm-hmm. Risk is probably stronger, but it's not as much as it first appears. Like,
yeah.
You know, Tristani's not 10% as good. Maybe she's 70% as good.
And a lot of times, the 70% as good lets you play those cards without people immediately being like, oh, Riss is out, let's kill it. Oh, yeah. Riss is out, let's kill it.
I mean, Tristani's still a very good deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that you've figured out your commander, it's time to figure out what the focus of your deck is so you can budget appropriately. Focus and strategy is integral. You have to really figure out what you want to do with the deck. You know, if you're just going to be like, I want to build a good stuff deck, it's going to cost a lot of money because the good stuff cards that are just always good no matter what, have been used across Magic's history and will eventually... it will inevitably just cost more, almost guaranteed. And then once you've figured out the strategy, go to edhrec.com. This website is so good.
Edhrec.com. If you're not using it and you play Commander or build Commander decks, then you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super quality. You can see the cards that fit into your deck. You can also see the sort of lesser used cards, and you can see the prices as well, and you can figure out, oh, I want to use this. Oh, I don't want to afford this, so I'm going to use this instead, et cetera, et cetera. This is an exciting section. It's called Building the Skeleton. And this is something that I'm going to create a deck list for. It's not going to be a full deck, and you're going to see it on Tapped Out. But we always talk about every single deck needing the key elements of card draw, ramp, removal, mass removal, a good mana base, and all that. And the skeleton of each deck is sort of like the immune system or whatever. It should be in every single deck, these elements. And for the most part, a lot of the cards are the same. So Sol Ring.
You're always going to have Sol Ring.
Command Tower.
Almost always going to have Commander.
A lot of decks will play a card like Evolving Wilds,
yep.
Especially in the two-color decks. So stuff like that's going to be in every single deck that is those colors. If you're white, you're playing a Wrath of God or something to that effect, or Path to Exile.
Each color has its wraths that are played, right? There's the Blasphemous Axe and those type of effects for sure.
Yeah. So... a lot of times you can overlap these cards. A card that I always talk about is Hedron Archive, which is a mana rock from Battle for Zendikar that you can tap for 2 mana, but you can also sack it at a certain point to draw 2 cards. So in that single card alone, you have card draw and ramp. So that is essentially a 2-for-1. It does 2 things in the form of 1 card, and then if you do that, you can actually open up another slot in the deck to put something else sweet in there.
Yeah, I would say, too, like if you are going to be investing in card, you know, a little bit more in any card, artifacts are... that either mana ramp you or draw cards are some of the best because they're going to go into any color deck and you always need card draw and mana ramp. There's not a single deck that you're ever going to build in Commander that's not going to want both of those things. So
yeah.
If you invest in, you know, a Thrawn Dynamo, not that it's super expensive, but it is it's more than 50 cents, you know, at least you know that card can go in basically any deck and never be bad. Now, some decks it may be better and it may be worse, but it can always go in there because mana ramp's always going to be necessary.
Yeah, and Wizards of the Coast has done us all a favor because they've been pretty good. They've been pretty good at reprinting a lot of these cards that they want every EDH player to have. And it's great because that's sort of how they slowly put their influence in on the game. So cards like Sol Ring, Command Tower, Solemn Simulacrum, Eternal Witness, the Signets, Swiftfoot Boots, these are all cards that Wizards has been very happy to print again and again in the Commander products. And it's awesome. I can't say this enough. Like, a card like Solemn Simulacrum could be a card that costs more money than it needs to cost, but it's a card that you literally, like Josh said, it's an artifact creature. You can put it in any single deck, and it almost always is going to go in most decks because it's just, it's got card draw and card ramp in it, and it's great.
Yeah, that card's amazing. Again, artifacts are just going to fit in more decks, and if they do card draw and mana ramp, for sure.
Yeah. So take a look at your deck. You determine how many of these staples you need. I usually, we say like, what, 8 to 10 card draw spells, 8 to 9 ramp spells, sort of like anything around that area. Each deck, of course, is going to be different. If you're a deck that needs a lot of mana, obviously you want more card ramp or mana ramp. If you don't draw many cards, you want more card draw. So the list that we're posting is going to have a very bare bones version of this, and you can just take a look at it. And it's a great place to just copy and paste, and like that's how you can start a deck. You know that these cards are always going to be good, and they're definitely going to help you flesh out your deck. And you can also spend a little less money on other cards because you know that these slots are taken up.
Yeah, you know, we got asked on Twitter recently, like, do you guys have an episode where you talk about like what a basic commander deck looks like? And I looked through our episode, I was like, not really, but that's a good starting point, right? 10 mana ramp spells, 10 card draw spells, you know, 4 to 5 wraths, and 4 to 5 spot removal, single target removal type stuff. That's, you know, again, those numbers are going to fluctuate, but that's a great starting point.
Yeah, and you also had a really good point about putting expensive cards into your sort of imaginary list first and then taking them out.
Oh, yeah. So this is something I thought about as a good, because there are analogs to a lot of cards that you wouldn't think. Like Doubling Season's a card we talk a lot about on the show recently because of the Super Friends deck. Mm-hmm. And that's a really expensive card. And you may be thinking like, well, I don't have Doubling Season and I don't really want to buy it. Well, if you've got some Planeswalkers and you want to play with them and you want a Doubling Season type effect, then there's a card called Gilder Baron, which has the untap ability and it doubles the amount of counters on one permanent. So that is going to approximate what Doubling Season does. Again, it's only in Simic. You have to be exactly in Simic. So, but there are effects, if you look in Magic, that will replicate most things. Some things... Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are a few things where it's just they only did that once.
Yeah, and a lot of times it replicates it by just costing 2 more mana than the original version did. So like Moat, you don't need to buy a Moat. Buy Magus of the Moat. You know, it's essentially the same thing, and it may not be as effective if someone like board wipes or kills it before you can use the ability. But like at the same time, that's not, you know, when you're saving $300 on a card, that's not, that one specific instance isn't why you're going to look back and go like, darn, wish I spent way more money for that card or whatever.
Yeah. Snapcaster Mage is another good one where it's like, I would add that to my list if I was building Mizzix, and I would have, that's my dream list. And then I would go through and be like, wow, these cards at the top, you know, if I sort by price, the top 10 ones, well, Snapcaster, I can get rid of that and put in Archaeomancer, which is not as good. It returns a instant or sorcery from my graveyard to my hand, but it has a very similar effect and at a very, very small fraction of the price of Snapcaster Mage.
Archaeomancer and Vedalken Orrery, you made your own Snapcaster,
kind of. I mean, it's again, yes, it's more mana intensive and it doesn't work perfectly, but you know, how much worse is your deck? If you have everything else is the same, your 99 has a Snapcaster, mine has the exact same thing, but an Archaeomancer, how much better is your deck? Is it 1% better?
Yeah, it's pretty minimal. It's like 1 to 3.
I mean, how many games will that even matter? Like, out of 100 games, will that matter 5 times?
Yeah, you have to think about how many times you're drawing it, how many times you're gonna have it set up to really benefit you over a slightly slower play.
Yeah, it's very fractional how much that would be better, and it is better. That's you can't really argue that Snapcaster Mage is not better than Archaeomancer. Yeah. But at the same time, because our decks have 99 cards, because that adds to a lot of variance in like what cards we draw in what order, the difference is very, very small ultimately, I think. So that's what I would do is a good way is like go through and Doubling Season's on there or Snapcaster Mage is on there or whatever card is on there. And then I would go and be like, okay, so that means that tells me this is the type of effect I want. But I'm not going to buy a Snapcaster Mage because it's really expensive. So what else in the history of Magic does a similar effect? You know, I want Snappy because I want to get an instant or sorcery from my graveyard and use it again. Well, there's a whole bunch of cards that do that.
Yeah, and even just Googling Snapcaster Alternative EDH.
Yep.
Those three were, like, you'll find the cards.
Yep.
They're all there. People have already been looking for this stuff in the past, and there's a ton of great resources online. Let's quickly touch on the land base for your decks. Just don't think you need to get the untapped original duels. You don't need them. They cost a ton of money. Like, two-color monocolor decks can save a lot by just avoiding shock lands and filter lands and all that stuff. If you build your deck correctly, so what sort of happens when you play and enters the battlefield tapped land is that you take what feels like a kind of a half a turn off because you're unable to play something that's as big as someone else that's playing a land every turn that's not tapped. However, if you build your deck with the right amount of ramp, with the right amount of card advantage, and you have those sort of two-for-one cards and your advantages in your deck, you're going to be able to make up that difference in a game. And again, like, the difference is so negligible because you're not playing one-on-one that the impact of not being on tempo or being tempoed out just feels way less because you have a lot more time and everyone's slowly developing at sort of a more similar rate.
I mean, I would say the same thing. We've got the same decks. In your deck, you have, you know, we're both red-green, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
In your deck, you have Taiga and Stomping Grounds. In my deck, I have the red-green Guildgate and the red-green Lifeland.
Yeah.
Okay, how much better is your deck?
This is even less than 1%. This is like,
yeah, because 0.5. How often are you going to be like, I play Taiga turn one.
Yeah.
I don't have a one drop. And I go Guildgate turn one. I don't have a one drop either. Nothing I could have played. So Now turn two, we're even. My card was the same as your card. Or turn six, you play a five drop.
Yeah.
And you have Taiga untapped, but no way to use it. I turn six, play my Guildgate, play a five drop. Am I behind? No, because I couldn't use that one extra land that turn. You can usually find a spot with a lot of, you know, leeway where, oh yeah, I'm not even a turn behind. I just didn't use 100% of my mana that turn. And how often in a game of Magic do you not use 100% of your mana? Because you just don't, you know, you have nine lands, but you don't have any spells that add up to nine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And like, when you're drawing a bunch of cards, you can just hold that tap land in your hand if you have to be able to play something that costs all your mana that turn.
And again, this is why this is better in decks with less colors, because you're going to have more basics. So you can choose the spot to play that lifeland or that Guildgate or, you know, one of these lands that comes into play tapped, or one of the have lands or something that's just a little bit, there's a little more variance. Like, a have land is going to be as good as a Taiga in a two-color deck, like, 80% of the time. And the other 20%, it's going to be just as good because it won't matter if it comes into play tapped or not, because it'll be turn one or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Don't fret about the land base in a way that's like, if I don't have these things, then I'm not operating at maximum whatever. It's like, some people never buy a single dual land, and they win games of Commander all the time. It does not have that major of an effect on it that you need to kill your wallet for it, essentially.
I think in our play group, is it just you and me that have dual lands?
I think Craig has a couple, and then I know Kessler has a couple as well. But in terms of, like, in every single deck, it may just be the both of us.
And I don't think it ever matters.
No, I don't think it does either.
I've never had a game where I thought, oh man, the fact that I have dual lands in my deck is why I'm ahead this game. And I don't think anybody else has ever thought that either. I mean, they're playing with shock lands, and they have fetch lands, and they have also good lands, but we have... You know, and not every one of my decks is all dual land out. I have a few.
Yeah.
But those decks don't feel like they're good because of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's talk about purchasing power. So when you guys are buying your cards, also to help save on the budget, to get back to the budget, combine shipping, friends. Don't go and just buy from 80 different places and they all have the lowest price on the card, but it's like, this place charges 50 cents unless for orders under $25.
This
place charges
$1. Buy it all at Card Kingdom and ding, one shipping cost.
I mean, that's where I was kind of going with it. But no, honestly though, like, you can also go to your LGS and pick up a lot of these cards as well. And oftentimes you can get the best deals on it because a lot of stores online have to satisfy, like, if they're shipping the card out and they're spending more on shipping it, then, like, you're giving them money-wise, it's not a worthwhile endeavor for them to ship that card for you. If you go to your LGS, they're not paying any money to have someone grab it out. They're paying a person a wage to go do their job, but it's not going to be like, hey, I pulled the card out of the bag, can you give me another dollar? It's like, no, I'm just going to pay you for the flat cost of the card. So doing that is also great way to save a lot of money. It's just making sure you're using the resources around you to min-max sort of your buying game. And the biggest thing is don't overbuy.
Oh, man, I'm so bad at this.
We are both awful at this. In fact, you've tweeted pictures of this.
Oh, it's so bad,
it's documented, dude, how bad it is for you.
Sometimes I'll be like, I'm building this deck, and I'll just start adding cards to the cart, and then they'll start arriving in the mail, and I'll stack them all up, and I'll be like, I know that I'm building one deck, and yet I somehow ordered 300 cards. A deck cannot have 300 cards in it, and for some stupid reason, that's how many cards I ordered. It also makes your life more miserable because now I have to figure out which 63 cards go in the deck. Whereas if I just spent that time online with all the tools available to do that, I, A, wouldn't have spent as much money, and B, once the cards get there, I can actually put it into a deck and play it right away.
Oh, I feel so bad for you. / I don't, because you're buying more cards, son. I love when you tweet a picture of it, because I'm like, embarrassment of riches over here.
It's just like, I'm so dumb.
You know what you can do to avoid that?
Be smarter?
Go Untapped Out and make a list of the cards that you want to do, or like use a Google spreadsheet and make a full list of the deck that you're going to build and stick to it. Now, you're going to see new cards that you want to put in there, but instead of just adding it to be the 101st card, just take out another card that you think it can replace.
You're going to have to make that decision.
Yeah.
So make it at the time that doesn't cost you extra money. I need to start taking my advice, because I'm always like, I don't know, but I'm just going to order both because then I'll figure it out later. And it's like, I'm not actually saving any time. I'm just pushing that time till later when the cards are in front of me and I'm at a table going, well, I don't know, which one do I put in there? And then I had to buy them both to make that decision. Why? That doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make much sense. All right, let's talk about some other considerations here before we wrap up the show. First up, build towards the future. Future.
Is this like the movie Tomorrowland?
Yeah, oh gosh.
I worked on that
movie. You worked on that movie,
I did.
So this may be your first deck, but if you don't plan on it being your last, outside of the skeleton that you're building for your deck, just make sure that your card choices are good for the deck, but also potentially flexible, sort of. You know, if you really want to work on budget, like I said before, Gilded Lotus, Thrain Dynamo, all of these cards work in any single deck, pretty much. You're going to want to put them in most every single deck.
Card draw and mana ramp on artifacts?
Yeah.
If I was going to spend, you know, a little extra on some cards in my deck, I would want it to be that.
Yeah.
More than Doubling Season.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are other cards that, for instance, in green, Krosan Grip. It's not a card I play in all of my green decks, but a couple of them do have it. I only need to buy one or two in the beginning of my deck building phases, and that card will slowly filter its way into another deck when I decide to build it. And that's just one less card that you need to spend money on, one less card you need to pay for shipping for when you build that new deck. And so your budget actually is paying itself forward if you're able to do that. Skyshod Claim, it's just classic mana ramp. The Signets, equipments like Swiftfoot Boots, Whisper Silk Cloak, you're always going to have a deck that's going to want one of these. And sort of the foolish thing to do is what Craig and I sometimes do, which is like, oh, I just need more Whisper Silk Cloak. I'm going to buy seven. Just buy seven. It's like, no. You probably have enough lying around, or you can take it out of another deck that doesn't need it as much as this one and maybe make that other deck even better.
Do you know I ordered like 15 of every Signet?
See, that is actually something I'm planning on doing, because I have more five-color decks now because of you, and those decks really like Signets.
Signets are awesome, but I literally have like a box just full of them somewhere. And
can I get some?
Yeah, because I didn't need 15 of everyone. Most of my decks already had them.
Yeah.
And they come in all the pre-cons. And yep.
That's true.
It's pure laziness.
Here's the thing. Like, if you're going to have a playable, just, like, you're never going to be upset. No one's ever going to give you a side eye if you play Moldrifter.
Yeah.
Or Beast Within. Like, no one's ever going to be like, that card's a low power level. What's wrong with you? It's like, no, that card's great. It's going to make it to another deck someday because the card's still great no matter what. And it doesn't cost anything because it was a common back in the day.
Yep.
I can't believe it was a common.
It's insanity.
I would have drafted 1,000 of them.
I still would. I still draft. Yeah. I mean, I can never pass that card.
Any chance you get.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing. So what determines card price? I call it the danger zone, the 3 CMC danger zone.
We should have done this song. As Metal under tension, taking you to touch and go. You know, my brother
3CMC.
Oh, yeah, we're totally on a tangent, but I just have to say my brother literally, like, to this day, he has mannerisms of Tom Cruise because we watched Top Gun so much growing up. Like, we would watch.
He still has it.
He wanted to be a pilot for, like, a lot of his early years in life from when he was, like, a grade school kid, and he still laughs like Tom Cruise to this day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, just he idolized Maverick. Not Tom Cruise so much, but that's, like, actual Tom Cruise mannerisms.
You should watch the latest short from Rocket Jump.
Yeah, actually.
There's a little bit of actually. The Danger Zone and Cop Gun is filtered into two of the shorts we've made this year now. At this point.
Some of the most disturbing imagery ever.
Yeah, it is it's a weird awesome. One. It's a crazy one.
It's called wait, I can do it. Speed Enforced by Radar
Aircraft.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Speed originally called aircraft. Baby on Board. Which I really like too.
That's a good hint right there. Yeah. Go check that out on Rocket Shop. Okay, back to the 3CMC Danger Zone.
Yeah, so formats are the reason that cards are expensive. Again, for the most part, cards, again, will be expensive because they're also in a From the Vault or whatever. It's a one-time print of something. But in general, EDH doesn't really cause card prices to spike in the same way.
No, not in the same way. Starting to... The format's gotten big enough that there are cards that are expensive because of EDH now, but mm-hmm. that's relatively recently. Most of the time, they're expensive because of Standard, Modern, or Legacy.
Mostly Standard and Modern. And yeah. If you get into the older cards, you could argue that the dual lands cost a lot just because...
They're because of Legacy.
Yeah, because you also can't find them anymore. You know, they're just old cards. So for Modern, the magic number is often 3. So cards that cost 3 mana or less are inherently more powerful for a format like Modern because they need their cards to be cheap and efficient and be able to be played in a game where, you know, I think the ending point they want to say for Modern is like turns 4 through 6, sort mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. on average. So cards that cost 3CMC are obviously much more powerful in that regard. EDH games run so much longer that we don't care about 3CMC that much. It doesn't mean that we don't want to play 3CMC cards, but... That's, you know, our average number is closer to 5, 6, 7 and up. And Standard's closer to 4 or 5. So if you see like a card that you have to have for your deck, you think, but it's also a Modern staple, just take a look and see if there's a version of it that costs more mana wise, because there almost definitely is going to be there something like that. Like we already said, Snapcaster Mage and Archaeomancer. They have similar effects, but Snapcaster, because it's played all throughout Modern, costs way more. If it was only an EDH card, it wouldn't be as expensive.
If it costs 4 mana.
Yeah, exactly. Dark Confidant is another card that's seen a lot of Modern play. Very expensive. It was one of the sort of the catch rare mythics from Modern Masters. Just play Phyrexian Arena, dude.
Yeah,
that
sure.
card is just arguably like much better for EDH. It doesn't die to board
wipes.
Oh, it's
100% better actually because it doesn't kill you. It
doesn't
either.
Murder you. Yeah, too. Like a card like Abrupt Decay is really good, but I would say Pernicious Deed is better in almost every circumstance as well. So,
well, Abrupt Decay suffers from the fact that like in our format, there's a lot more bigger things that Abrupt Decay can't hit. Mm-hmm. So it's actually
yeah.
This is a really good point. I also think like if you're an extreme budget deck, you might just shove more mana rocks in there and then use the higher casting cost stuff.
Yeah.
Because that'll sort of even out, right? On turn 2 and 3 where the more expensive cards are, you play rocks mm-hmm. so that you can play, you know, you have a good one here, Zendikar Resurgent rather than Mirari's Wake.
Zendikar Resurgent costs 7 mana, Mirari's Wake costs 5.
But if you just, instead of having like 2 drops and 3 drops that are, you know, spendy cards to spend your money on, you just play mana rocks that are sort of cheap. It'll get you to that 7 mana faster so that you can cast it. And then it'll basically be, once it's out, they're basically the same. It's just like, you know, getting it out a turn or two early is why it costs a lot of money.
Yeah. And maybe the biggest takeaway from today's episode, do not buy standard staples for your EDH deck. Standard is like the biggest pitfall you can fall into. Now, if you're a limited player and you draft a bunch, great. Maybe you opened up a really expensive Avacyn or whatever. But that card is only expensive because of Standard. And Standard is by far the most popular format. It drives the prices the highest. And especially for cards that power, like their power level just isn't that high ultimately in the history of Magic. And also for EDH as well. Now, occasionally you'll run into cards like Captain Eldrazi Flicker.
Captain Eldrazi. Eldrazi Displacer.
Eldrazi Displacer, right?
I didn't know that was his name.
I had to think of it because I didn't remember his name. But like that card is going to be good eventually. And it saw a big spike in Standard because it saw play. And then it dipped back down to more where it should be, sort of.
Yeah, when you say don't buy Standard staples, I think we're not really saying don't ever do it. Just don't do it when it's at their height.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to save money, and I've said this many times on the show, you can substitute time for money, and your time can be used just paying attention to the price fluctuations and just watching when it starts to go down, or paying attention to what decks are, you know, popular and winning Pro Tours and GPs, you know, standard ones. And so you know, like, oh, these cards are really popular right now and in demand, so I'm not going to invest in that card right now. But this other card has fallen out of favor and dropped a lot, and now is the time I can pick it up. And, of course, there's always rotation. So we know, if you're not aware, Standard is on an 18-month rotation cycle. Mm-hmm. So after 18 months, the set will fall off. So Kaladesh is going to come out this fall. 18 months from then, Kaladesh won't be legal in Standard anymore, which means you know at that point, exactly when it falls off rotation, when the new set comes in that kicks it off, those cards are going to just drop precipitously in price.
And that's the same pattern that has always been for Standard. The card enters Standard, it shoots up in price. It doesn't see play, it goes down. It sees more play, it stays at that price. When the card rotates out and people stop playing that deck, they have no reason to buy it anymore. Everyone is out there trying to sell it as fast as they can because they know that they don't have any more need for it. But as Commander players, this is where you go in, and it's the garage sale. This is like the perfect chance for you, like, sweet, here are the cards I can buy because of my budget, and I know that this is the best time to buy them. Like, and let's say you didn't have it for 6 months or whatever because it was still in Standard. You're not going to really miss it for that 6 months as opposed to the 30 extra dollars that it cost you. Like, you could much rather spend those cards on 10 other good cards
that just rotated out, you know, if you just fall into that pattern. And honestly, like, I just went through just this last weekend to tune decks, and I still hadn't added in a whole bunch of cards from, like, Battle for Zendikar. Mm-hmm. Like, I just took my rune deck and added in the diamond mana symbol.
Enough
of it so I could put Displacer in there. That's how long ago? That was like a year ago that card came out. You know, and I just got around to doing that. And my deck was still playable and very, very good, you know, because, and I upgraded. Displacer makes it better, but it doesn't make it so much better that I needed to do it, like, in an instant. And I didn't do that, obviously, because of budget concerns, but you could, and you probably wouldn't even feel it.
Yeah, and, like, again, these are just one, it's one card out of 99. So let's say you have $100 to spend on a deck. Each card on average is going to be a dollar. If you spend $20 on a single card, is that card being $20? It's 20 times the amount of another card that on average of $1. Is it 20 times the power level? Is it make that amount of difference? If you had waited 7 months and now it's $5, you can make a much better case for it having that 5x multiplier in terms of how much impact it has, but not 20. And it's because of Standard. It's not because every EDH deck is like, man, if you don't have this card for this commander, then you're just done. It's like, no. In Standard, if you don't have four Archangel Avacyn in this deck, you're just going to not have a good time. Like, it's not going to be the best build, so that's why the card's expensive. It's because the card in that format, in that deck, has that level of power difference, but not for EDH. So would you rather spend $20 on one card or five cards for, like, $4?
Oh, yeah, five cards for $4 every time because just the number of games that I'm going to draw one of five cards is so much higher than the number of games where I'm going to draw the one card that I spent a bunch of money on. Pay attention to Standard. What's hot, what's winning, what's not, what's out of favor, when rotation is. That's a really good way to just maximize your dollars spent and your trading capability if you're trading with people too. So
That's you know, a great point.
You can even have an Archangel Avacyn and want it in your deck, but it's still often correct to trade it right now to get it back later after it rotates. Because right now, I can get $30 worth of card for it, and I can trade it for something that's popular and modern and is never really going to go down in price. And then once rotation hits, I can trade back into my Avacyn that I did want for my deck. But now, you know, I got $30 for it, and then later I picked one up for $6.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Trade up. And we have a whole episode about this as well.
I wanted to talk about our buddy Phil DeLuca, who is one of the hosts of the Commanderin podcast. If you haven't listened to Commanderin, very good show. Also about EDH, Sean and Nate, also the other hosts. So Phil has this really cool strategy that can also be something you can use to keep all your decks budget. And what Phil does is the first step, I believe, is sleeve all your decks in the same type of sleeves. So once you've done this, he creates what he calls, I think he calls it the EDH binder. This is the binder system or the binder strategy. And I don't know if Phil made it up, but he's the one that popularized it to me anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give him credit, but maybe Phil would give somebody else credit. I'm not sure. But what you do is you have a whole bunch of cards that are expensive, but they're staple type cards. And so because all your decks are in the same sleeves, you can have certain cards that hop between decks, so you never need to own more than one copy of anything. So let's say you have a Sensei's Divining Top. Sensei's Divining Top is one of those staples. You could literally put it in every single EDH deck, and you would be right to do it 99% of the time. So if you have, you know, 5 or 6 decks, or 20, you don't want to buy 20 Sensei's Divining Tops. That's just not a very efficient use of your money, because you can never play more than one at a time. Any given moment, you're playing one of your decks and you can have one Sensei's Divining Top in play. Mm-hmm. So what Phil does is he keeps the Divining Top in a binder, and then all his decks are sitting there and they're 80%, 85% built. And he has a little list that says, when I pull this deck out, I just have to go into the binder and I have to pull out these 7, 8, 10 cards.
Mm-hmm.
Top, you know, whatever else. This one needs Doubling Season and, you know, some other... I don't know.
Sylvan Library, whatever.
Yeah. And then at the end, when I'm done playing that game, I just take those out and put them back in the binder. And then I grab this other deck. And this one needs Top 2, but it also needs, you know, Omniscience.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs blah, blah, blah. And so this is a way to save money. You get to have some of the expensive cards, but because you're not buying 6 copies of, you know, Sensei's Divining Top, you can save a lot of money that way.
Yeah, our friend Vinny has a similar thing where he does checklist cards. So you've seen these with, like, if you played Innistrad.
This is super smart.
Yeah, it's a card that will say, you know, because those cards are double-faced, if you're playing without sleeves, you need to be able to mark it off so you can bring in the double-faced card later. For Vinny, these are cards that just say Mirari's Wake on it, Sylvan Library. And when he plays it, he plays the card out of his deck, and he just has the card in sort of a deck box or somewhere that all the cards are there, just like Phil's binder. He pulls it out, and that is the literal copy of the card. And if anyone ever gives you crap about doing that...
You own the card.
You own the card. You did it. If you, I mean, like, you could prove a point, be like, sure, I will put it in the deck. And then when I go play this other deck, I will go to the other one, take it out, and put it in the sleeve. Do you want to really wait for me to do that every time? Because
yeah,
I do
I'm
own
actually,
the card.
I'm actually doing you a favor by not making you wait while I, like, rebuild my deck.
Yeah.
On the fly. I actually like Vinny's take on it even a little bit better. And Phil's is great, don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm.
Because his actually speeds up so that in between games, nobody's waiting for him. It's just like at the time he actually draws and plays the card, then he has to go get it.
Yeah.
But again, you do own the card. And nobody should be able to tell you, like, well, you have to own 4 copies of that card. I'm sorry.
And I don't think anyone should or ever will. I hope not. Because
nobody will say anything. I can't.
This is a friendly, casual format, guys.
Yeah.
Another thing that has helped me throughout the years is learning that I'm not limited to my own deck. In that EDH is great because we get to play with everyone else's cards by playing cards like Phyrexian Metamorph, Mimic Vat,
yeah.
Dimir Doppelganger, Clones, and all of these cards I love because it's like, hey, check it out. I'm going to use your deck to my advantage, and your expensive card is now my expensive card.
Oh, man, I forgot.
Yeah, get that paper out here. So I love that.
This is a Jason Ault thing also, right? He talks about it in 75% a lot, which is like your deck can never be accused of being too powerful if it's literally using the things from your opponent's deck.
Yeah.
Because I'm just as powerful as your deck. If you don't play Blightsteel Colossus, I can never have one because
that's
I'm playing
sad day.
Because I can play clones and stuff. I mean, that's that philosophy. Yeah, it's really good because a clone is a very cheap card, but it can be as good as the best creature on the battlefield. It can be Avacyn, you know, it can be a $30 card.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, the original Avacyn. Also, the new one's $30 too, huh? Crap.
Yeah, it's a little less now.
Man, Avacyn's expensive. The Magic, the M15 one's not that expensive.
No. Is it just Avacyn, Guardian of something? I don't know.
Avacyn, that one got ripped off, whatever it is.
Yeah. So my favorite last thing to do is speculate. You know, you could be building a fun deck and
I don't know
a
if this is going to save people money over
no,
time.
No, but like, let's
it's
say.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun, right? It's like, oh, this card, why is this card only 5 cents? Like, why don't we try it out on my deck? Because I think it's really cool. Turns out that card ends up being like $5 down the road or whatever. Like, that's a really good feeling, knowing that because you went in budget, you were able to find a card that someone else didn't know about or the community didn't know about. And as a result, it went up in price.
Constant mists,
yeah.
This is one of those cards I have like 30 copies of because it's like one of my favorite cards. And at some point, I was like, this card's really good. It can't stay this price forever. I'm just going to buy a lot now so that like I never have to worry about
it. Yeah.
And it's gone up to a couple bucks. It used to be like a quarter.
You also have Winding Canyons as
oh,
well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so these are cards that are
Winding
great.
Winding Canyons is a reserve list, I
Ooh,
think.
Really?
So that's one of the reasons, yeah.
Oh, even better. And John Avon drew the art for it, so hey.
I think it's reserve list. Oh, crap. I hope I'm not wrong. Yeah, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, everybody. But I think it is.
All right, so that's it for our talk on budget builds.
Oh, wait. I want to talk about speculating
that
a little bit more.
That is not on talking about budget builds.
Be careful. They could cost you money.
Well, don't speculate like Josh does where you buy 80 copies of it. Just
or
buy
300.
One, you know, 300.
Well, that's what I take speculating to mean. That's what you meant. Like
buying
extra copies for, you know, possible future value.
I'm just saying speculating, like if you're trying to have fun with the deck and want to surprise your opponents with an off the sort of beaten path card, like... Yeah, one slot in your deck could totally be like a sweet, like, who knows? Like, this is kind of cool. Like, I hope this works.
It's not like speculate financially, like speculative investment. It's more like speculate creatively on a card that may or may not. Got it. I was confused.
Yeah. That's my verdict on what it means to speculate.
Gotcha.
My supreme.
Do the Jimmy's version, not my version.
Supreme verdict.
My version keeps you with, 400 supreme verdicts that haven't gone up in price.
I think they went up a little bit.
Yeah, it's not much.
Well, when you buy that many, like a cent difference is like, all right, $4.
You know why I did that? Because I went on Brainstorm Brewery the second time I was on there, and they were talking about specs and stuff. And
those
I got,
boys are trouble.
I got all excited, like, yeah, fine, MTG Finance, speculate it. I'm going to try that. And I was like, I'm smart. I know about magic. And I was like, I'm going to buy out a bunch of Supreme Verdicts. Boy, oh boy.
Don't
I've been sitting
me.
On those things for like a couple of years. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, don't ask me how many Expedition Tectonic Edges I have. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So that will
that.
Do
that,
it.
That could still pay off. That
yeah,
could still,
it
be
still
good.
Pay off. They're Expeditions. Hey. Yeah. So that's it for our episode on budget builds. Don't forget, guys, the internet is your number one resource. We're on the internet. So is everything. So just like Googling the words, card name, budget replacement will get you all the relevant results you want for Magic the Gathering. It's a great way to begin your journey and to end it. If you're still new to deck building, we actually have done a lot of episodes on sort of how to create decks, deck techs, and stuff. So episodes 103. Episodes 100, where we live build a deck. Actually, maybe not watch that one. Episode 96 and episode 50 are all sort of good starting off points. If you
the Deck Doctor series and the Archetype series, also good. We're just plugging all the other casts today.
Heck yeah.
There is a cast by our good friend Andy Hull, who's been on our show a couple of times. It's called Commander's Brew.
Brewing.
And that is an EDH podcast that's dedicated to budget builds. They set themselves a budget, and they each build a version of the deck every episode, every week.
Yep.
So you can see those guys have – they're actually like gurus in the EDH budget realm because they have a whole bunch of sort of their favorite go-to cards that are the equivalent of Jimmy. You know, Jimmy and I talk about a lot of the same cards all the time, like Rhystic Study. Well, they have their cheaper versions that do the same things because they're building decks all the time, and they know they need the same – categories that we need. They need card draw and man ramp, mm-hmm. but they've found the cards that fit into the lower budget range that get the job done. So it's Andy Hull and Sean Tabaris.
Yep.
And we've both been... Have we been on their show? I don't think I've been on their show. Have you been on the show?
I don't know. They haven't invited me yet. Actually, they invited me. I'm sure they have. Please tell me they invited me.
They invited me, and then... Oh, this is what happened. I couldn't... Like, the dates didn't work out, and it didn't happen.
You didn't budget enough not to have time for it, did you?
Yeah, we've had Andy on our show twice. We haven't been on his show even once.
You missed my pun. Dang.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Maybe next. I said you didn't budget enough time for it.
Oh.
The listeners got it.
That was a speculative joke.
Oh, God. All right, to the listeners, how do you guys save money when you're building decks? What has been your single best purchase ever? I love that. Like, hey, I got this before it jumped up in price, and, you know, it feels great, man. Or I got this before, you know, when it went down and
back
up.
What's yours?
$10 at Goodwill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Oh, I can't beat that. I know
that
story.
No, I don't think it's ever going to get beat.
No, it's impossible.
Once again, our podcast is sponsored by the one, the only, CardKingdom.com, an amazing website both for your buying needs and for your visiting needs. iCastle Card Kingdom. These stickers say I Heart Card Kingdom. So make sure you guys check it out. Command. If you guys want to use our affiliate link, you can go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone, and they'll know that you came there from us. and they've got great prices. They've got amazing shipping. I just bought a bunch of cards off of them today. I got some of the Urza lands because I was trying to get a full set of those. I was speculating.
Are you building Tron?
Yeah, Tron. I want to build Pauper Tron. So make sure you guys check that out. Again, it's cardkingdom.com/commandzone. I love Card Kingdom, and they're also revamping their website soon, so I can't wait to see what all the cool changes are going
to
be.
Don't forget to use the affiliate link. It is the best way you can support our podcast.
You can use it all the way up until you check out. You can add all the stuff to your cart. And if you haven't used the affiliate link, don't worry. Just add it in, type it in, and then log in, and then you're there. You know, they know that you're there, and that the purchase you make in your cart tells them everything they need to know.
All right, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic.
Very exciting. Rocket Jump just wrapped up production on Dimension 404. This is a show that's going to be coming out, I hope, later this year. It's a 6-episode anthology series, similar to The Twilight Zone and Black Mirror, which is a show from the BBC.
But it's geared towards gamers.
Yeah, geared towards gamers and geeks and a little more lighthearted. It sort of takes the idea of, like, the 404 website that you get when you're wandering off into the weird part of the internet, and these stories are all kind of like creepy and weird and crazy and a lot of fun. So,
I mean, this show, it's gonna be on Hulu. Is that correct?
Yes, it will be on Hulu.
It's gonna be out on Hulu. It's legit budgets. Like,
yeah, real budgets, real actors.
Yeah. This was
really exciting.
Yeah, like Patton Oswalt is in it, and Jimmy Wong. Yeah, Lea Michele from Glee is in it. Like
Sarah Hyland from Modern Family, Joel McHale from Community.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they got real names, real budgets. I think their budget was like the same as like Supernatural or some of those shows. I mean,
sick.
Yeah, close to that. So this stuff looks amazing. I've seen little bits and pieces. I'm sure you've seen more than me. We're always happy that Rocket Jump is just doing bigger and better things constantly. So,
and look, we have a video podcast. We're doing bigger and better things too, right?
Yeah, our budget is almost the same. We're going to have Patton Oswalt on here pretty soon.
You guys don't see what happens after the podcast. We turn all the stuff off. Josh puts all the product back in his boxes, puts it into his car. I go to my computer and I like render it all out, and I send it to our editor, and I go to sleep like 2 hours later.
Glamorous lifestyle, everybody.
Glamorous, yeah.
Glamorous lifestyle. Speaking of glamorous people, Ben Bateman, always dressed to the nines, and Alice Kessler, rarely dressed to the nines, Sorry, Alex.
It's so true. You can't deny it. He's not going to say no to that. He's a man of truth.
They are the hosts of our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. They talk about modern, all things competitive magic. You can follow them on Twitter at TheMMCast. You can also find them on rocketjump.com right next to us under the podcast tab. We were just hanging out with those guys last night. Doing a little bit of drafting, doing a little bit of EDH. Kessler's a big EDH player, but not so much. Fun times. Like those guys.
Love those guys. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. He does the video and audio podcast, so you guys can see full video, including our glamorous faces, as well as card images and lots of other fun stuff, by going to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. And they also feature these really sweet opening animations by Jeffrey Palmer. He does living card animations. You can see all his works by going to twitter.com/livingcardsmtg. And that about wraps it up for this episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.